Greetings and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that will never stop using Lit 3 over Thundaga. I'm your host for this episode, Jordan Rudek, and tonight we're revisiting one of my favorite JRPGs of all time, Final Fantasy IV. Joining me is a man who definitely would have turned down the opportunity to become a paladin and then instead remain a dark knight. It's David Lloyd.
Yes, I definitely have the darkness within, and I don't plan on giving that up anytime soon. So it would have been a pretty hard convincing me if I was in Cecil's position that I was trading up in power.
So the game basically ended for you once you finished Maldor deals then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to shut it off. That's a good enough ending for me.
Yeah, I feel like it's, you know, I put in the effort for a bit, and you know, the rest of the world can take over and figure it out on their own, you know?
Tough love. That's right. What I'd forgotten about this version, we're talking, of course, about the Pixel Remaster version of Final Fantasy IV on this episode. I'd forgotten that Cecil retains that darkness move that he can do that kind of uses like a dark energy from his sword to hit all the enemies, but it also costs you HP whenever you use it. That move, I mean, I thought maybe there's other versions of the game where it's more powerful, but the amount of life it siphons from you is a lot. It kind of makes the move a little bit useless, I'd say.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
I can't
say
I used it much. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty neat playing this new version of the Pixel Remaster, because the PSP version I hold in such high regard. It seemed like almost like these Pixel Remasters one was based on that because it was so well done. So going into this one, I was a little skeptical that it would be able to keep the same level of detail or the same quality. To me, this Pixel Remaster still, you know, it still may be the best. It's the best looking version, I guess. Maybe not the definitive version, just because it doesn't have all the extra, like after game stuff, the extra content, but for the kind of vanilla game, it was definitely a fun experience. Another fun 10 to 12 hours.
What's so funny about Final Fantasy IV is it has more extra versions or extra content than any of the other of the first six, right? You have like the After Years, the Final Fantasy IV remake on DS, obviously the 3D remake. I can't remember, what's the other one? Not the After Years. There's another one that's kind of that there's like those two kind of side games as well.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'll come up with it later. But for whatever reason, this game got all of that attention. And, you know, 5 and 6, they didn't really get, you know, side games like that or what you might call a really, really extra DLC or something like that. You know, a couple of the games like the GBA versions, they had like extra dungeons and kind of post game stuff. But for FF4, I don't really know why, but it just had all of these surrounding games kind of based on it or using it or remaking it. And for that reason, I mean, it's always been really interesting to me, the base game aside, just all of this extra content and extra ways of seeing the game that you can go through. So obviously, we have to think about, like, is this the definitive version? Is this the version people should play? Like, yeah, you should play this game if you're a fan of it, right? This version of it. I think the way that it looks is great. I love the spell effects. I love the backgrounds. It's just very bright and vivid. There's just like kind of small little things that I think I've mentioned on other episodes, like with, you know, some of the character art, I think is not the best version of how the characters look, especially on the overworld. I think the boss's disintegrating is still kind of funky looking. I think it just looks better in other versions, you know, it just looks kind of stale and odd and mechanical, I guess. But yeah, just kind of going through the game again, like I'm just about to enter the underground. I've played the game so many times, like it's all just, you know, I know it like the back of my hand. Like there's no second guessing myself about where to go next or what to do or needing to talk to anybody. So I've kind of been forcing myself to explore the towns a little bit more just to remind myself of like, okay, how does the game actually tell you where to go next? You know, how many like NPCs, how thorough do you have to be with exploring to know where to go next? And something I just did this afternoon, I was going to fight the Dark Elf, get the Earth Crystal back for the Kingdom of Troia. And I knew to go to the north to get a black chocobo and fly over to the Dark Cave, Dark Elf's Cave. But you might not know to go and find a black chocobo unless you explore the town of Troia outside of the castle. And there's actually a stable that talks about how black chocobos can fly. And so if you see that you have to get to that island, you see, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out where to go next. And then a white or a yellow chocobo won't take you there. But by exploring that town a little bit, you can figure out, okay, I need to find this black one, or, you know, maybe there'll be one nearby. I can just explore the continent or the area that you're on and hopefully find one of those. So, you forget that kind of like, how does the game lead you when you know the kind of plot and you know the steps so well. So I was kind of trying to force myself to explore a little bit beyond the critical path, I want to say.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see what people like, someone who hasn't played the game and how they're like, how easy it is to get through it, because they, like you said, like, you know it so well. It's funny you mentioned that part of the game, because I was even thinking of like the Dark Elves cave, like before I went in, I was thinking like, there's something about this cave. I know there's something. And then I realized like, oh, right, this is the cave with the, where you can't wear armor because it holds you down or whatever. And then I remember getting to the Dark Elf and thinking, there's a trick to the Dark Elf. And I like wasted probably like 15 minutes trying to remember like what the trick was, so that I didn't have to, like, I didn't want to die and have to redo it. So I was like, what's the trick? And it didn't dawn on me that there's no trick necessarily. It's like, you have to, I guess the small spoiler here is you have to kind of lose to the elf initially so that you can be saved. But I was like trying to rack my brain on like, oh, how do I, you know, not have to do that with the elf? How can I just defeat him? And so, yeah, it's just funny stuff like that where it's like when you know it's coming and you can prepare for stuff like that. But yeah, like how does someone who has no idea, like, do they just walk in and like, what's going on? You know, like, mm-hmm. It's, yeah, I'm always curious how, you know, what people think of stuff like that when they're getting in. Or like you said, like, it's just like, where do I go next? Like some of these games, you know, I feel like Final Fantasy does a good enough job of kind of signposting where you need to go for the most part, that it's not like one of these, well, if you don't have the manual, you can't, you know, you're going to get lost or whatever. So
we're going to talk about it soon enough. But I think five of the initial six, I think five is one that stands out in my mind as being a little bit harder to know where to go. And don't know it as well, and I know that time I did play it through I played the GBA version, I had to kind of look up where to go, and maybe just lack of experience with the game, or you know, coming to it after so many years, an older game like that, you know, we're so used to a little more hand holding in games. I was going to say the Dark Elf cave, like it's almost like the Marsh cave equivalent in FF4, you know, it's that first major dungeon that I think really tests you. The fact that you either strip your characters down or, you know, they basically become unusable, right? Cecil without his sword is practically useless. You know, you might as well not have him in your party at all. I equipped him with like a bow and arrow. He does next to nothing with it. Like, it was kind of useless. So you just make him a healer, right? You just make him use his white magic spells to heal the party, I guess, at that point.
These dark elves, it's the same thing too. The Marsh Cave, you're going to get the crown for the dark elf.
True. And it's true, yeah.
In this game, you're getting crushed trying to get to the dark elf. It's...
Yeah, they're troublemakers, I guess.
Yeah.
there is a trick to that Dark Elf boss in the second phase, the one you can actually win. I believe you can, I don't know if they fixed this or patched it at some point, but I believe you can cast a tornado, that ability, or weak, whatever they call it, to bring him down to like low HP. You know, he might use his ability on you, or the third elemental fiend certainly does, but that weak spell where you see like a tornado revolving around them and it brings them down to like, you know, single digit HP. I think you can use that on him, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
I still love using Phoenix Downs on undead enemies.
It's great. Yeah. Yeah. Or healing spells, I guess, work too, like cure two and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That part of the game kind of reminded me of just one of the themes of the game that we don't always talk about so much. You know, we think about, you know, love and redemption, obviously, for Cecil, going from a member of the Red Wings and all the kind of atrocities that they commit to becoming a paladin, getting on that path of trying to right all the wrongs that he's been a part of. And there's just a lot of death in this game, like a lot of death
a lot of loss.
And like for
so
for
much.
I mean, yeah, again, I think we will be doing some light spoilers for the game, but yeah, just a lot of party members that you have die or become incapacitated throughout the game. And I can't think of a lot of other games where so many people in your party, I mean, like just the number, the real number, either leave you, die, or become unusable for some reason. I think this game stands out to me a lot for that, is that you form attachments to these characters. You find ones that you really like through their dialogue, their abilities, what have you. And they have some unique traits, right? You think back to the twins from Mysidia, Palom and Porom. Like, they have this twin casting ability where they both have to be alive to do that spell. I don't know if there's a formula to which one you get, the flare attack or the comet attack. They both look really cool in the pixel remaster version, especially comet. I can't think of another, again, things that FF4 is doing that other games haven't really done before or since, an ability where two turn-based party members have to work together to do a single spell. Like, can you think of another game that does something like that, David?
Not off the top of my head. And there was definitely more than a few times in this playthrough where I tried to use the twin cast and one of the twins got KO'd and the curse words that came out of my mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, like the shall not be repeated.
You kind of need them to fight the first elemental fiend, especially in that second battle against him. I can't remember his name. It's not Mylon, is it? Mylon was his name in the FF2 version. I'm only going to use FF2 Super Nintendo version names, so forgive me for that. But Mylon, and then Mylon Zed, when he does the back attack against you, and it might push them to the front of the party depending on your layout. I think you can cheese that battle too, but if you're fighting it straight without their flare or comet ability landing, it's a pretty tough fight for sure.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like you mentioned, with how, you know, how many people you kind of meet and then lose. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you have the people just long enough to form attachments to the point where it all feels like a knife to the gut when you lose. Like it's funny. It's just like going over the number in my head, and I'm like already past five or like I think it's like six. Seven, like it's crazy how many party members you end up with, and then lose. Just throughout the entire game, like it just never ends. Like right up into the end, where you get somebody at the very end for like I don't know, maybe 30 minutes, and then lose them too. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a funny thing or enjoyable thing about when you get to the moon, you get to you get Fusoya to join your team. He's got just some wicked spells. Like he's like a super powered version of Tella, right? Yeah. So it's almost like a second coming of a character that you got really excited about using, right? When Tella gets all his spells back, except for Meteo, he's probably your strongest damage dealer at that point, but he's so weak HP wise, right? Like keeping him alive is really the tricky thing. You have to have him in the back row. You have to have Cecil covering him or just keeping his HP up, right? Because he's got, you know, 400, 500 HP. And whenever he levels up, his HP basically doesn't go up. It's one of those great kind of storytelling things about the game is that when Tella levels up, he gains almost nothing in terms of stats, right? He doesn't gain, he doesn't gain any MP. So that he's not able to cast Meteo without, you know, that being the final straw for him, right? He's only got 90 MP. Meteo, of course, takes 99, and he wants to use that on Golbez to avenge his daughter. Like,
well, he is pretty old.
This game is, yeah. I actually love his portrait as well. Like, he does look like, you know, 80, 90 year old man. Like, he's on his last legs here.
Well, wait a minute. This is Square, so he's like 40 or 50.
Yeah, sorry. That's right. Yeah. If the facial hair covers up
the gray, the Zeus silver hair, so he's clearly in his 40s.
Yeah, he does remind me of like a Gandalf type, you know, like just his look and maybe the character design. I'd love to know. Amano would have done some of the character, but I'm thinking specifically about the sprite as well. Like, I wonder kind of what their inspiration was there, but it wouldn't surprise me if it were something like Lord of the Rings too.
Yeah, or Merlin, like something like
that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he does kind of fit that stereotypical older mage wizard type figure for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. So you said you're about three quarters of the way through the game. Now, remind me, what other versions of this game have you played before, or you know, what number playthrough is this for you?
Yeah. Well, this one actually did finish. So this is this is at least four. At least I can think of like four versions. Like there's, I played through the original Super Nintendo one. Mm-hmm. I didn't finish the 3D remake one because it was just irritating to me. I didn't like it very much.
I actually do like that version, but that's just because I've played all the other versions of the game, and like I guess it's a new one, and I like the difficulty with that one, and it's also got some
cool... it's definitely harder than any of the other ones. I think it's the hardest one.
I think so too. Especially if you don't know a lot about that game and you don't know kind of what's coming or what abilities do stuff, what weaknesses and trick kind of tips and tricks to go through it. Yeah. It's got a neat thing where if you play the game a second time, you can basically. Again, I might not be remembering this right, but you can switch, you can gain characters' unique abilities and give them to other party members. For example, maybe you can give like the jump ability to someone else. I might be misremembering that, but I think it's something like that. You gain their class abilities as items by the end of the game. And then in a second playthrough, you've reassigned those or something like that. So does a couple neat things like that.
Up until I played this one, the PSP version was definitely my favorite just because it was, had so much color to it, like the backgrounds were updated, they had like the elemental effects when you do like magic and stuff, so it was definitely my favorite leading up to this point. And but I don't know, I think the Pixel Remaster just does a little bit extra. Again, it's one of those things where it's like it's the Pixel Remaster I think is a little bit stronger in terms of kind of like looks and playability, just because you mm-hmm. can kind of get through it a little bit quicker. Back in the days of 1,000 games to play, it's nice to get through a game a little bit quicker than you normally would these days. But then, yeah, you lose that extra content that comes with the PSP version, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were talking about the Elf Cave a bunch, and I was going to say being able to turn off encounters there is a godsend, like not having to worry about like dragging your fairly weak party of four with a completely ineffective paladin, and you're just kind of relying on Tella, almost exclusively Tella and Yang, I guess, to get through that part of the game. It is really nice to be able to turn off encounters, and again, just for someone who wants to kind of just lightly kind of breeze through the game, I'm not looking to, you know, grind my way all the way through and put in, you know, 20 plus hours into this because I've played it so many times. I kind of just want to see, you know, the main story points again and how the characters look and how the different spell. I'm looking forward to picking up Edge and seeing how his, I'm not sure what the abilities are called. They were called Blitzes. Maybe they kept that.
It's still
name.
Blitzes. Yeah.
Yeah. Still Blitz. Cool. Yeah. So how the different Blitz abilities look. I love the fight against Rubicante. I think he's just such a fantastic, fantastic mini boss.
Let me heal funny, you here first.
Yeah. He's great. I love when villains or bosses do that. They heal you first for whatever reason, and they all have a reason to do it. Like, but his seems the most noble or honorable. Like he really wants you to be at full strength, you know, and if he's going to beat you, he's going to beat you on like a level playing field. Right. I really like that about him. He just seems so much more sophisticated than the other fiends, and he comes a lot later in the game as well, right? Like Rubicante and Edge is one of the final party members, lasting party members that you get. And so that happens so much later in the game. You fight the first two elemental fiends almost back to back, right? They're very close together. And then the third one isn't much longer after that. And then you wait, you know, a number of hours into the game before fighting the final one. And I think that also gives him some extra kind of weight. So there's extra kind of, just feeling to that fight. Like you've been waiting a little bit longer to take on this final one. And you knew there were four to begin with, and there's one remaining. And so when you get there, there's a little bit more meaning to that fight, I think.
Well, and they do a good contrast, because I'm pretty sure the crazy doctor is like the fight right before Rubicant.
That might be right, yeah.
And he's like an arsehole.
Totally.
So you kind of have this like, and I think even Rubicant like mentions that. The doctor went too far. Like, what?
That's right. And another kind of written, you know, this is going to be the all praise hour for Rubicant. But he kind of says like, yeah, that's not the way to do things, right? I think he might have been just kind of killing people needlessly, or maybe running experiments or something like that. That's, right?
Well, it was the thing with Edge's parents.
Yes, that's right. That's right. He's experimenting on turning them into monsters. Yeah. It's good. Like, he's a very good villain. I think probably the best villain in the game. I think even Golbez is a little bit kind of wishy-washy or in the background a lot too. He's good. Like, don't get me wrong. I do like Golbez as a villain, but if you think about amount of screen time, I think Rubicant does a little bit more of an effective job.
Yeah. The funniest thing about Golbez is when he turns into, what's the hand in Adam's Family called?
Is it?
It's funny because
Thing. It was Thing or It.
I was
monster.
Like, it's one of the two. I can't remember. But isn't it Cousin It's It?
Cousin It is the one with all the hair.
Yes.
His hair, like, from top to bottom.
And Thing is the hand.
Thing is the hand.
But that scene always kills me when you defeat Golbez. It's just his hand picks up the crystal and leaves.
It's really good. And that's what's funny is I think that's the first crystal in the dark on the underground where the dwarves are.
Yeah.
And that scene is that whole like 10-20 minute scene there where you go behind the castle because you see, or in the back room because you see the dolls jumping over the wall.
Yes.
Really great. It's so like eerie, so like kind of freaky, right? You go back. I think that's one of the great horror elements or horror scenes in the game for sure.
Yeah, because they don't even seem like they're on the screen. They seem like they're behind your screen to a certain extent.
It's like a diorama, and you're kind of seeing behind it. You know, like that. There's something else happening. Outside the boundaries of the screen. It did feel like that, sure. But that even that boss fight against the dolls, I just remember that being you're racing against the clock to beat the individual dolls before they turn into that big doll. It was Calibrana or something like that in FF in the Super Nintendo version, but. I'm just at that part, getting to that part soon. And I love what comes after with Rydia, obviously, making that great comeback, and the Mist Dragon just comes out of nowhere when you're on life support at that point.
Yeah,
I've mentioned this before on that podcast, but still probably one of my favorite moments in an RPG of all time, definitely.
Yeah, and Edge is still. I forgot how much of a horn dog Edge is.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. He's like the Edgar of Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah. Definitely. And then, there's so much comedy in this game. It's hilarious because, like, then there's the scene where I think Cid is working on the airship and Edge is, like, hitting on the girls, and Cid, like, drags Edge onto the ship and, like, gives him a wrench or something and makes him start working.
Yeah, it's got the hammering sound effects as he's repairing or fixing the airship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game does a surprisingly great job. Again, for something from like the early 90s, it does hit a lot of different emotional notes and tones. Like there are sad moments, there are funny ones, there are ones that would make you feel angry or make you feel like overjoyed. It does kind of give you a pretty good ride through all those different emotions, and maybe that's one of the reasons why it's always stuck with me. Thinking about just those kind of formative years, you're growing up, you haven't had all that many experiences in your life to that point, but then you play a game like this where it kind of runs the gamut and you're kind of living vicariously through all these characters. You're experiencing that loss. You're experiencing that sorrow, that disappointment, that anger. And so you're kind of getting all of those, at least for me, I'm like 6-7 years old when I'm first playing this game. And, it's really easy for it to leave a lasting impression just thinking about the way that this story unfolds, the way these characters come across. Like you're experiencing so many different things happening.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
I was gonna say, like, has I know you're not you're still working your way through the game, but mm-hmm. is it riding up or down your list yet? Is the recency bias kicking in or?
Yeah, it's funny. I've played the game so many times that it's almost like I just kind of want to get through to the end now. Like I'm like, oh, okay, I know what's gonna happen. Like RPGs are tough. Like it's tough to, I think, keep replaying them, especially one that's so story focused like this one, mm-hmm. rather than being like a mechanics based one like FF5, FF6, where you've got the job classes and the Esper system, and the rotating party members of six. You have different ways to play through the game to kind of make each playthrough unique. But in FF4, like every playthrough is more or less the same. There's a couple little different things you can do, but you're not switching up party members. You're not really, you can use some different strategies for taking out the bosses maybe, and do some of the smaller side quests in the second half of the game. But for the most part, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. And if you've done it once, you know, you kind of know what's going to happen.
Well, they always have the same skills like this. It's not like, you know, it's not like you can, it's not like you said, there's no job classes. So it's not like you're, mm-hmm. you're choosing like, oh, well, maybe I'll do like a four black belt.
It's exactly. No, like they're, that's right. That's right.
They are what they are. Like you can't change it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, with Rydia, you know, you can go and collect all the summon spells. Like think of that as like a little side quest. I've never actually gotten any of the enemy summons. Like you can get Imp and Bomb and a few other ones. I've never actually gotten those. I remember reading about it in one of the players' guides, one of the Super Nintendo players' guides, and just being like, "Oh, that's such a cool thing! Like I should go and try that." And just never letting it happen. I never really figured out how to get that to happen. If you just have to get into fights with those enemies, and if it's a random chance or something like that. But
yeah.
There's not really any point. Once you get Rydia back in your party, you don't really need the Imp or Bomb summons because you can get Titan and Bahamut and Leviathan and a lot more powerful summons. So it's really just like a completionist kind of thing. And without achievements, at least in the Switch version, like there's not really any reason to go for something like that. So
it was funny on this playthrough. So I got to the very end, and then it got to the point where I needed to grind a little bit because the boss kind of whooped me, and I knew I was like, okay, I need like a couple levels here. So I hadn't actually gotten Bahamut yet, so I thought, oh, okay, this is, I guess, you know, since I have to grind anyway, I might as well go get Bahamut while I'm at it. So I went and got Bahamut. I got to the levels that I needed, and then I started the final boss fight, and the first thing that happens is Rydia is knocked out.
Oh no.
And so I ended up winning, like I beat the game with the other three characters still alive. But it was just annoying to me because it's like, I didn't even get a chance to use Bahamut.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was the journey, right? I'm sure, like, going through because Bahamut Cave, if I'm not mistaken, there's a lot of behemoth enemies in that one.
Yeah, I think there's
super
three.
Powerful, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the behemoths were harder than Bahamut.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Especially well,
they don't have a gimmick to them. You just have to pound them down, right? Like, Bahamut at least has the timing of his mega nuke, so you kind of know you can use your wall spell. You know how to prepare for that, right? But
yeah. Well, and the behemoths
have a ton of health.
The behemoths are strong against magic, so you really have to rely on the physical attacks in that one. Yeah. So
yeah, and before you get the crystal sword, like which is kind of hidden in that very 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 final dungeon. Yeah, Cecil can't put out maybe as much damage as Kane or even Edge.
I thought I would take Fusuya in there and sneak in the Bahamut, but with the glass cannon, it doesn't take much to knock him out. So I was like,
looks hilarious. On. His defeated sprite, where it's just like a pile, like a head and a pile of his beard.
Yeah,
like,
he's just a pile of beard. That's it.
It's great. Yeah, I love that.
A bundle
one.
Of beard.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite ones for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's not like I like this game any less now. It's more just that I've played it through like a dozen times. And so going through it again now, other than like some of the visual flair, obviously is nice. But I find some of the spell effects not as not quite as attractive as in FF6. I think just seeing the different abilities in FF6, it's a little bit more impressive than it is in this game. I don't know if it's just, you know, what they were working with before. And trying to translate it over, maybe wanting to retain more of the spirit of the original game. And I get the sense that that was the kind of MO with these pixel remasters, is they want to be as close to the original experiences as possible without changing too much. So
yeah.
What do you think? I was going to ask you what you think of the new soundtrack. Cause that is, there are definitely places where I like the original better for sure.
It's funny. In the Steam version, they still haven't given us the like a lot of the options that are in the Switch one. So I was on the, I only had the option of the orchestral, and I really enjoy the orchestral because it's nice to have the real music playing.
Yeah.
I do. It was funny. I was on YouTube listening to Final Fantasy OSTs again, and when you hear the pick or the I don't know, the MIDI or whatever you call it, like the sound chip from the SNES. Mm-hmm. The nostalgia kicks in though.
For sure. Yeah.
So it's one of those like, oh, I kind of, you know, I'm listening to it now thinking like, oh, it actually would have been nice if I could have had the option to switch. So I probably would have flipped back and forth at the very least if I had the option. I'm hoping they bring that to Steam soon, because it'd be nice to have.
Do they have did they add the boost?
Nope.
The experience boost? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
No experience boost, no random encounter turn offs. I had to do it the old fashioned way.
I got the sense that was like right around the corner. Like I saw an update like a month ago.
I'm sure they said it was coming right away. Yeah, they said it was coming pretty soon, but I still I don't know. I don't know if I just didn't update it on my Steam Deck or I'll have to double check, but I keep going back into the configuration thinking maybe it's in there today, and it's like, nope, not there.
Yeah, so I think some of the new themes are fantastic. I think about kind of the slower, kind of softer ones in particular. So the Troia theme I love, when Edward's playing his harp to kind of disempower the dark elf, to neutralize him and neutralize the magnetic field, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one a lot. And then theme of love, obviously, which kind of the scenes where you rescue Rosa and stuff like that. I think that's really good. What I don't like as much in the orchestral version is the Chocobo themes. Actually, I think they're better. I like them better in the original. So that's when you're riding the yellow Chocobo or the black one, or just in the Chocobo forest. I think those themes are just maybe a little bit more memorable or unique in the original version. I think kind of the chip tune or the chips soundtrack I guess you'd call it chip tune music, right? Or kind of 16-bit music, something like that. I just like those versions better for those particular ones. I think they don't have the same kind of fun or joy to them when you move them to orchestral. They lose something, I think, in that translation. So
yeah, there's definitely a lightheartedness. Maybe it's because it just sounds so much different from the other music.
Yeah,
that it really stands out for when in chiptune style, but when you switch it to when it's the same instruments playing the music, it doesn't have that same impact.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound right for like the kind of fun, wacky Chocobo theme to be played. Yeah, with an orchestra. I just can't really explain it other than that. It sounds a little bit weird to me. So I do like the original version there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was going to say, I looked up the name of that. So it was the After Years was the one kind of set in the future of Final Fantasy IV. And then there's one called the other scenario is called Interlude. I don't know that I've ever played that. I don't even think I ever finished the After Years either. I like the base game so much. And there must have been something just off about kind of seeing these characters come back again or having new, I think it's After Years, I think stars Cecil and Rosa's son, Theodore.
Oh, yeah, I've never really been into these that sort of thing where it's like, oh, this is what happens after the fact. Like even when that Final Fantasy VII movie came out, the one where it's like, well, this is what happened after they left. I was like, no, that's not what happened. They there was only Red 50 or Red 13. And, I don't know. I don't. I guess I've just never been that interested in the extra stuff. It's funny, it makes me think of that stupid picture that was on Twitter this week where it's like, wouldn't you want to know what's behind the Mona Lisa? And it's like, no, I don't care.
No, we're good. the story wrapped up fine. There's no need to see what happens, people getting married, having children, someone, whatever. It's good.
I like the ambiguity to a certain extent, because it's like, well, if because now if you have Rosa and Cecil have a kid, it's like, okay, well, now you're telling me that they got together. Like, there's no, maybe, in someone's mind, Rosa and Kane actually got it together or something. Like, it's, I don't know. I just kind of, like you said, I enjoy the base game. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, give me the next base game. Like, I don't know.
Certainly in Kane's alternate future, he would be together with Rosa. that's for certain. And I like the idea that, kind of Rydia and Edge, it's a will they won't they kind of thing. Like he's kind of bugging her. She's kind of like, I don't care. Just leave off.
You're just a knob, buddy. I don't care.
She's great. I think their interactions in the game are really good. Like I do want to highlight that. I think that his kind of advances and joking with her and her just being like not giving him the time of day, I think it's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that'll do us for our kind of another look at Final Fantasy IV, continuing our kind of series of mini episodes on the Pixel Remaster Final Fantasy games. obviously thrilled to have these games on Switch and PlayStation 4, and hopefully soon some of those updates come to Steam, so that people playing on their Steam Deck like David can enjoy the boost upgrades and the different options, like turning off the encounters. What a wonderful
it'll come in as soon mechanic. As I finish up all the they were the all the that, pixels
remastered. That is for certain it will
the later. Day after
they'll announce it, like the day FF16 launches, like, oh, and if you don't want to play FF16, you know, you got just upgraded the they know what's going on. But yeah, thanks again, everybody, for joining us on this one. If you have any questions or episode suggestions, you can send them to david@thethirstymage.com by email. Check us out on Spotify. We'd love if you left a rating there, or I think you can leave a comment or question there as well. That'd be fantastic. And we'll see you again next time for another episode of Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster Revisits.
Bye. Bye.